This is All Things Considered. I'm Noah Adams.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Wars are waged twice, once with weapons and then with words. The outcomes of the actual battles are eventually equaled or surpassed in importance by the meanings attributed to them. That is the outlook of historian Jill Lepore, who has written a book called The Name of War. It's about the writing that described King Philip's War, a conflict that may have claimed more lives, proportional to population, than any other war in North America. It was a two-year conflict between the Puritan colonists of New England and Algonquin Indians, and although it's been largely forgotten, Jill Lepore finds it no less instructive.
The wars we forget are just as important as the ones we remember. We remember the Civil War now because it's a metaphor for contemporary American race relations and the divisions of American society. And in the 19th century, everyone remembered King Philip's War. We're obsessed about it because it was a metaphor to understand the Indian Wars in the Plains.
In fact, one of the most widely produced plays of the 19th century, Metamora, was about King Philip's War. The war itself took place in the late 17th century, and it was brutal. Half the towns of colonial Massachusetts were burnt down. Hundreds of colonists and Indians were killed, often in massacres. Jill Lepore says its very name reflects who won and wrote about it. King Philip was what the colonists called the Indian leader they were fighting.
King Philip was the name that the English colonists in 17th century New England gave to a Wampanoag Indian leader whose Indian name, his Algonquin name, was Metacom. And so the war, which was fought from 1675 to 1676, was a war between a confederation of Indian tribes in New England and a coalition of New England colonies who were defending themselves.
The cause of this war, what ignited it in any case, was a murder.
Yeah, a Christian Indian, an Indian who had been converted to Christianity and was, in fact, trained at Harvard in ministry studies and was a minister at a Christian Indian town in the colony of Plymouth named John Sassaman, warned the governor of Plymouth in January of 1675 that Philip was planning to wage a war against the English, that Philip was fed up with greedy land deals and wanted to kick the English out of New England, out of his territory, and warned the governor that he was going to likely to be punished for his betrayal. And the governor didn't really lend much credence to this alert and ignored Sassaman. And a few weeks later, Sassaman was found dead under the ice in a frozen pond in Plymouth. And Philip was accused of the murder, his men were accused of the murder, and three of his men, his chief counselors, were executed in June of 1675 for Sassaman's murder. And Philip, within a few days, immediately started arming his men and attacking towns in Plymouth and Rhode Island and later in Massachusetts, and was later joined by other Indian groups, Narragansetts, and others in New England.
Now, I'd like you to explain your take on this conflict, which is that What the colonists were really fighting for was their identity as English men and women, and that the Indians, in effect, the Algonquins, were fighting for their identity as Indians.
As I see it, in 17th century New England, the English Puritans perceived themselves over the years as having become more and more like Indians, as having become more savage, that they were somehow contaminated by this new world. And the war, King Philip's War, was waged in part by the Indians to reassert their Indianness, to get rid of the English so that they wouldn't be contaminated by European ways.
To a Puritan colonist in New England at that time, what distinguished him or her from the Indians, among other things, would be that they lived in houses, in towns, not in wigwams in swamps, and these were important sources of identity to them, you would say.
And they were things that paradoxically were lost during the war. I mean, all these markers that your ordinary Englishman or woman in New England understood as making them different from these naked, savage, nomadic Indians, none of which are really true, but that's how the English saw them. And again, what's amazing when you read these records is it's the myth that's going on. The Indians, in all sorts of ways, are telling the English, we don't want your stuff here. We don't want your houses. We don't want your plant. You know, we don't want your crops. We don't want your pigs. We don't want your sheep. We don't want your cows. We don't want your churches. We don't want your Bibles. And they're destroying those things, and they're destroying them, and they're mocking the English at the same time and saying, we don't want these things. And, there's this great scene where a group of Indians is burying captured Englishmen in the ground up to their necks, so they're just their heads are poking up above the ground, and they taunt them and they say, you English have grown so many things since you've come into this land, let's see how you grow when we plant you. And the English, they report all these discussions and these taunts, and they don't get it. They keep thinking that the war is waged because God is trying to tell them that they're not good enough Christians. That the Indians are not saying anything, that God is communicating to them through the Indians, just reminding them to be better Christians.
Now, you as a historian, a couple of hundred years later, are able to infer what the Indian view of King Philip's war was. But for the most part, the written record was obviously controlled by the English, by the colonists, because they could write and they could print. So what we receive, and they wrote quite a bit about this war, but obviously their view of what was going on colors our historical view of what was happening, because the other side couldn't write about it.
And a lot of historians think that that's why we can't tell the stories of people like Indians, people who didn't leave written records. I think it's still worth a shot. I think there are things like that moment where the Indians taunt the Englishmen and plant them into the ground, where you can read a lot of meaning into the snippets that are left for us. And those Puritan narratives, and there are so many because the English were so mortified at what they had done and the way that they had waged a war, that they wrote about the war at great length to defend their conduct, have a lot of anxiety within them. And you can sort of see behind that anxiety to hear some of the messages that they were receiving from Indians, even though they didn't really understand them or listen to them carefully.
If, in fact, King Philip's war was being fought over not merely territory but also identity, then surely some of the most interesting participants in this war were the Christianized Indians who had moved across a line and at least were part of both sides to the war, both Indian and also Christian. And their experience, I found quite interesting, when they are called upon to join the colonists and to show their loyalty to this little extension of Christendom that was in America, they were also required to bring a couple of heads of Indians with them to behave rather savagely in the process.
And it's the kind of savage requirement, I mean, just you imagine these people strolling into town carrying these heads, that caused the English to be concerned about what the war had done to them. I mean, what is really ironic to me is that the reason the English wanted to wage this war is because they were so worried that they had become savage, and then they fought so savagely that they were left with even more anxiety than they began with. And that's an anxiety that has pervaded all of American history in terms of Europeans and European-Americans' dealings with Native American peoples.
Well, Jill Lepore, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Historian Jill Lepore of Boston University is the author of The Name of War, King Philip's War and the Origin of American Identity. She spoke to us from member station WBUR.